Good morning, brothers, sisters, and honored guests. It is good to see you all here at High. I would even say it is great, since it is the beginning of a spiritual retreat, which should leave us all very refreshed at the end. You have just been read Deuteronomy chapter 2, and I have been asked to serve the Ecclesia in opening comments, a task in which I am both honored and pleased to take. We'll begin in verses 1 through 3. We see that Israel, after their defeat at Kadesh, is refused a shortcut through the land of Edom. And then they begin their travels by way of the Red Sea, compassing Seir many days. After which the Lord finally commands them to begin their northward journey. And concerning these events, looking for more detailed explanations of the exact locations in which they go, you can reference Numbers chapter 20, verses 21 and 22. And going back to Deuteronomy, I would also like to add that verse 3 says, "Ye have compassed this mountain long enough," which was also much like what you see in chapter 1 while the Israelites were in Horeb. Mention of their detailed travels, again, can be found in another place in Numbers in chapter 33, verses 35 through 37, which speak of this period between crossing the Ezion Geber, camping at Kadesh, and the beginning of the wandering time period following and then concluding, or at least partially, at Mount Hor, where Aaron died. Going through verses 4 through 8, you begin seeing their travels to end their period of their time in the wilderness. God specifically tells them not to meddle with Edom. In this instruction, he tells them to pay for any food that they buy and for any water that they drink. In verse 7, you see Moses saying, "God hath blessed thee in all the works of thy hand. These 40 years thou hast lacked for nothing," like Brother Burl said earlier. Not only have they been provided for completely, but they have been abundantly and excessively blessed if they can afford to buy meat and water on their journey for an entire nomadic nation of people. You're talking about a land which Brother Jim mentioned earlier, was nothing but rocks and sand for a lot of their journey. If you can be blessed enough to be financially able to buy meat and water for a nation, that's pretty amazing. God still has not left his people. He may be angry, but he has not left them. Going forward to Psalms chapter 136, verse 16... you see thanks for this. "To him which led his people through the wilderness, may his mercy endureth forever." The Lord also says here that he will not give Edomite land into Israel's possession. To wonder why he says this, you should remember the blood ties that are present between the Israelites and the Edomites. The people following Moses were descendant of Jacob, and the people in Edom were descendant of Esau, as Genesis chapter 36, verses 1 and 8 can both be said, Esau is Edom. That is his nation. And they were all descendant of Abraham. In Amos chapter 1, and also in Obadiah chapter 12, you have mention of the brotherly covenant, which should not be broken. Specific mentions of not giving land for possession also makes me think of the book of Daniel, chapter 4, where you can find in verse 17, it says, "The living may know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdoms of men and giveth it to whomever he will." In essence, God determines military prowess of the Napoleons and the Hitlers of our ages. He determines the borders in which Russia, China, anybody else of any era will expand to. And all of that, we must remember, he does to continue to prove his majesty and his power. He uses it for his purpose, as I will mention further along in my comments. Moving forward to verses 9 through 12, God instructs the Israelites to not disturb or battle with the Moabites, who were also descendants of Lot, brother to Abraham. Yet again, blood ties and the brotherly covenant come into play. Following that, you can see an accounting of some history regarding the overthrow of the Ammonites, which were likened to the Anakims by the Moabites. Some of you may recall from this morning in chapter 1, verse 28, that the Anakims were part of two significant events. They were part of what made the Israelites mumble. They were part of what made them afraid. And then they were also there when Israel attacked and helped drive them out and chase them as bees. Verses 13 through 15 deal with the death of the old generation, the men of war, and the crossing of Zered. The new generation was finally able to cease their wandering entirely and begin earnestly moving towards the land of promise. Now, while they were at the Brook of Zered, there must have been some sort of distinct or lengthy pause, evidenced probably by the phrase, "Now rise up," found in verse 13. This pause was likely to let the rest of the men of war be consumed, as the Lord swore, and can also be seen in Psalms chapter 95. And you also must remember, when they were crossing the Brook of Zered, the land must have started to significantly look better than anything that they had seen during the time in their wilderness. Maybe it wasn't in a plush, fertile grasslands or verdant forests, but it must have been something better than nothing but rocks and sand. So that started to give the new generation hope as they continued their travels through Moabite lands. Verses 16 through 23 can be grouped together because they discuss what the Lord tells his people not to distress the children of Ammon, along with more history detailing the history of conquest between the people who had been there before. And not distressing the Ammonites, part of it can be attributed to the blood ties also leading back to Lot. Note here that the Lord tells them not to have anything to do with the Ammonites. So instead of just saying, do not disturb them, or do not meddle with them, he says both. And to remember, if you look at the Hebrew here, to disturb means to attack, and to meddle means to have anything to do with at all. Do not integrate yourselves with them. This could be seen as very good advice, since to steadfastly follow the law, Israel should have no dealings with people who have no mind for Yahweh. This could be very, very similar to today in the world we live in now, in which we face spiritual assaults from every side and from every way imaginable. And we must keep ourselves separate from the world, though we must reside in it, to reduce the amount of risk to our spiritual well-being. Now, the Ammonites, between the two tribes descending from Lot, can be seen, or seemingly so, to be more fleshly-centered and fierce. If you look in 1 Samuel chapter 11, he says that I may thrust out all your right eyes and lay it for a reproach upon all of Israel. That's an Ammonite speaking. And also, in Amos chapter 1, that the Ammonites have ripped up the women with children of women with children in Gilead to enlarge their border. We have an example of simple hatred and brutality. I want to take out your eyes as a reproach for all of Israel. And from the second, we have brutality, covetousness, and murder. just because they simply wanted to expand their borders. How wise must it have been for the Lord to instruct Israel to have nothing to do with Ammon at all? The final section contains the remaining verses 24 through 37. These verses detail the beginning of the conquest of the kingdoms of Sihon and Og. But before I continue, I would like to remind you of some words that you can find in a much earlier book of the Bible, Genesis chapter 15. While Abraham was in a deep sleep, the Lord came to him and told him all of the things that would be happening to his people. He tells him about the coming captivity in Egypt, how it will take 400 years. He tells him about the Exodus, how he will set his people free, and when they leave Egypt, they will leave so abundantly blessed. He also tells them something that you can really link to what is about to happen in the next verses. In verse 16, he tells Abraham that in the fourth generation, the Israelites will come to the promised land again. For the Lord said, the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full. Now remember, the Amorites are the people of Sihon, the first people to be utterly destroyed. Moses, going back to Deuteronomy, sends out communication to Sihon, a treaty to allow Israel to pass through his lands via the highway, not stopping until they are on the western banks of the Jordan, at the original promised land. Reference to this law of battles can be found in Deuteronomy chapter 20. Sihon refuses, and they battle at the banks of the Arnon River. This is the very first victory that the new generation of Israel has, and it's very decisive for two reasons. It had profound effects on Israel's enemies, and it gives the new generation assurance that the Lord will take them to the promised land. For the profound effects on the enemies, you can flip to Joshua chapter 9, where Rahab voices fear of the Israelites because of their conquests in Sihon and Og, which were very prominent military powers in that time. Again, referencing back to the Lord will build up military power and simply let it be overthrown to show his power and glory. The same could be said of the Egyptians. He continued to harden Pharaoh's heart to be able to do the plagues, to show his power and glory, to give his people hope. The second message, like I said, is one to the Israelites, is that with the Lord, they are assured and they are capable of doing anything. In Romans, Paul says much of the same about overcoming our greatest adversaries, in particular, the flesh. In chapter 8, verse 31, if God be for us, who can be against us? Who can we not defeat with the Lord on our side? If he is enough to contend with our greatest enemy, ourselves, what can he not help us accomplish? The next prominent military victory for Israel came at Jahaz, where Sihon had amassed an army, which was in turn completely decimated and trodden underfoot. The meaning of Jahaz is very significant here, because it also means to literally be trodden under your feet, as Sihon's army was. This defeat opened the floodgates, essentially. Israel stormed across the land, conquering Amorite territory, city after city. It says, they took all of his cities at that time and utterly destroyed all of his people. Now you must ask yourself, why would you do that? Parents, family members. I know how I would feel if somebody asked me to kill children. I don't know if I'd be able to do it. I don't know if I'd be able to kill at all. But if you look at Numbers chapter 33, verse 55, it speaks of having to destroy the inhabitants, or they'll grow up to be a pain in your heel. They'll always resent you. They'll always hate you for taking over their territory, killing their family members, killing their friends. And they will undermine every effort you have. Think of it like an ant colony. If you don't kill it entirely, it's going to come back. It's still going to be there and it's still going to give you problems. In closing, I can say that the Israelites, following this, yet again in Psalms, offer praise for this in verses chapter 136, verses 19 through 22. Because they say, praise Yahweh for delivering us, Sihon and Og, and giving us their land to possess. His mercy endures forever.